You're listening to Am I the Bullcast, the only podcast about Magic the Gathering ever in the universe. It's surprising because it's a very popular game. You'd think there'd be more podcasts about it. I'm your host, Mike Carrozza, behind the Am I the Bullest column over on Commander's Herald, EDH Rec, all that stuff. Joining me, as always, super producer and genius, Morgan Sanchez. Hi, Morgan.
How's it going, Mike? Over here, buried in foils and secret layers that I should not be buying, but I'm doing it anyways.
What? What are you buying? Yeah. What'd you buy?
So, don't ask. Don't judge. Okay, you know what? I'll tell you. It's that easy. Don't judge me, but I got the foil.
I'm gonna do it.
I mean, you could guess. I got the foil. I got the foil Bobs. Got the foil SpongeBobs.
Yeah, you did. The whole deal?
The whole thing. All of them. I spent too much money on them. You don't look. don't look, because I didn't look. I just sat in that line while I was working for 6 hours and then still bought them. So, I mean, I'm fully pilled. Yep. I'm fully secret layer pilled.
How many basic lands come in that? Just one of each?
I think it's one of each. Yeah. In the bundle, at least, because it comes with one. It comes with each of the SpongeBob ones. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you think that there's the special card in that one is a waste?
That would be so cool.
It's not Bikini Bottom. It's like what's that place where there's the bus stop and SpongeBob gets freaked out?
Stockton, California. Oh no, that's something else. That's never mind. Not that place. That's another place.
Not real world references. Come on now, Morgan.
Only SpongeBob.
I have to update people on a sad thing because people have been asking me and wishing my uncle well. Unfortunately, he passed away. My uncle, I went to his funeral yesterday. It was a celebration of life. He was sick near the end, and the overwhelming response was kind of a relief that he's no longer suffering. I miss him a lot. He means a lot to me. I appreciate your concern, and I love your condolences. Thank you so much for reaching out and checking in. I just want you to know you don't got to do that. I'm all set. Thank you very much for the kind words. Don't you worry about me, and I appreciate it.
True Ugin behavior.
yeah. I know. I really do appreciate it, but I do get kind of in my head about it. Like, you don't got to know that. You know what I mean? Cause it's like the one time that I feel a little awkward. You know what I mean? I'm not a guy who feels awkward. I don't feel that emotion or that state often. And in this case, it's like, you know, getting this kind of messages from people who don't know me on a personal level. It is a little bit of like, I did talk about it. And I'm sorry that I talked about it. And you're doing absolutely the kindest thing to talk to me about it. And I appreciate it. I do. I really do. But there's a part of me that's like, sorry, Ken. Do I have to tell you about Frank now? Like, I appreciate the condolences. I appreciate you checking in. Thank you so much. I'm so sorry if I'm weird about it. So that's that. Didn't want to spend too much time on that. Now we can move on to Magic the Gathering. Morgan Sanchez, I would love to pivot to you to discuss Cardsphere.com because I hear you've got quite the acquisitions.
Yes.
Cardsphere.com, proud sponsor of Am I the Bullcast. Shout out to Cardsphere. Shout out to everybody that works at Cardsphere. The articles on there. Just read the Nemesis article. This would have been 2 weeks ago from when you're listening to it. But there's an article that obviously piqued my interest, which is the 15 most valuable Nemesis cards. And I'm looking over it and like, obviously you got to have a couple Parallaxes. You're going to see like Tangle Wire. Like the Parallax Tide and Wave are the ones that I expect at the top. Guess who's right? But, you know, a couple ones that I didn't expect to see at all. Killswitch is one that I like forget exists. And yet it was on this list. Or Days.
Approximately $10 billion.
Foil Days is $214. However, non-foil Days, I didn't realize wasn't just like bulk.
Yeah.
I thought like Days and $3. Okay. So that's that Mr. Krabs one. It goes up a little bit. You know?
Yeah. Crab tax.
Obviously, Cardsphere.com, check it out. They got articles that are worth your time. If you're at all somebody who loves to, first of all, go down some memory lane a little bit You got some of the stats for recent times. Like, I love looking at the top trades because it gives me an idea of where people are looking. You get an idea of, like, especially around spoiler season or preview season, however we're going to refer to it, you kind of get a sense of, like, what people are building based on the cards that would go well in certain decks. And with Tarkir Dragonstorm, buddy, I've been building.
All dragons all the time.
Except give me the Zergo all day, but also give me so many other ones. We'll talk about that later. But Morgan, tell me about your current Cardsphere adventure that you teased me before we got started here. What's up with Cardsphere? What you got coming in?
Yeah, so a lot of people might not know, but the marketplace is international. You can obviously choose whether you want to send to other countries or receive cards from other countries, because obviously, you know, something's coming from Antarctica. It's going to take, like, you know, at least 10 or 12 days. But I recently, I added a foil guild pact Witch Maw Nephilim to my wants list quite a while ago. And I was like, I want a near mint copy. You know, I'm very particular with my shiny stuff. I was like, I'm never going to get this. This card's about 100 years old at this point. Nobody knows what the heck it is. And, like, it's just one of those weird random things that I want. Lo and behold, about, let's see, the beginning of this month, actually. So it got here pretty quickly because I just got it literally like last week. A person from the area known as Portugal messaged me and said, hey, I have one of
the
these.
Portugal area.
The Portugal-centric area said, hey, I have one of these, but it's like in my bulk somewhere and I need to find it. Like, is it okay if I commit this and then, like, you know, send it to you in, like, you know, a week or whatever? And I said, yeah, sure, whatever. Right. Totally fine. I'm like, if you just have those in your bulk, that's a great place to be. What else you got? And so he sends it to me, like, you know, on the 7th of March and got it this week. So pretty good turnaround time. It was cool to see it went through, like, the French post or something. So it had, like, a really cool stamp on it. That's also something that's really neat for international stuff, is you get international stamps, something like that. And cool cards. And I mean, it got here safe and sound just in a top loader, dude. It was awesome. I love it. So I personally don't send internationally just because of the risk factor. But I mean, it definitely opens up, like, a huge marketplace if you're willing to, you know, send to people overseas or even receive from people overseas if you don't mind, like, waiting, you know, a little while longer for cards. So it's been a blast.
Hell yeah. I love that. I'm glad that the marketplace is so open that you can order from different places. Maybe I can get rid of my Seedborn Muse that's in French, aka literally Musée Né des Graines, which, if you don't know, graine is slang for penis in Québécois French. So you're a muse born of penis.
Well,
anyway,
I don't judge.
Well, I mean, I have to say, Nephilims are interesting. You said Witch Maw Nephilim is the
Witch
one.
Witch Maw Nephilim.
You're a nut. That art has scarred me forever. Here's the thing about the Nephilim is that, like, they were the OG four color commanders that weren't technically legal, but if you wanted to play four color, it was either that or being like, look, I'm playing Child of Alara, the worst thing to see in the command zone. But
for multiple reasons.
I'm not playing blue. You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly.
The art for all of the Nephilim, like, I just need to say phenomenal. That it's so good. They're all so weird. They're all so crazy.
Disgusting.
Scary. And I mean, I don't know about you, but, like, just the way that they look, they always feel like they're those four colors to me. Like, just like the perfect epitome of, like, the four. Like, what is, I want to know the art direction for these guys. Cause, like,
I mean,
I don't know. And maybe it just takes a minute. If these aren't cards you've experienced before or looked at, please do, because they've only been printed, I think, like, reprinted three times. On one of them was, like, the list. So
yeah, your Tiller Nephilim was definitely on the list because I opened one of those and it was like a foil list. So it was Mystery Booster. Glint Eye Nephilim was in two reprints because I remember it was in Commander 16, which was the four color commanders, of course. And then Dominaria United Commander, so, like, the Jared Carthalion decks, and then both Witchmaw and Dunebrood apparently got list printings while Ink Treader got none.
Boo.
It's the only one with a guild pact only treatment. I'll say Witchmaw Nephilim, gross looking ass card, really, especially if you zoom in on the face above the teeth.
It's got nice little hair patches for Flair too.
Yeah. Dwartiller Nephilim is my favorite though, mechanically, of course. Let's be real. It's also without green, so it speaks to me a little bit more. Big fan of the Nephilims. Great call on picking those up. But I'll say, you teased me about one that you could not believe was just $6.
Yeah. Oh,
tell
so
me
like
about this.
I mean, this is like the double-edged sword of the fact there's so many releases, is that we get all these like dope treatments and I'm able to get all these cards. I just want foils now. I think I've fully converted my religion of magic collecting to foil only. Like I cannot. So every time I open a booster pack, I'm like, just I want the one. I want the one foil or the two foil, you know, if you get the good pack that comes with two of them. And I'm like, get rid of this crap. Put it on Cardsphere. I don't need it. I don't want it. You can have it. But so what do I do but go and just happen to look at a set that I did not open a lot of, and maybe nobody else did, but because it's, you know, a quote-unquote master set, but Innistrad Remastered. Get a retro foil Griselbrand, which is, of course, banned in Commander. Nobody cares, right? Griselbrand rules. He's a baddie.
It really,
certified freak. $6. $6 for the retro foil Griselbrand. Are you kidding? 100 years ago, when Avacyn Restored came out, if we had these treatments, that'd be approximately $1 billion card.
I am going to look up Griselbrand on MTG stocks right now just to double check like its history for foil. Because I am curious.
I don't want to remember. I remember. I think when it was in standard, it was like $40. Like, I don't know if you can look at it like that short of a graph, but like, it was crazy.
I have no idea. The foil multiplier back then was like, what, five?
It had
five
to have
times,
been.
And its all-time high was 33.
Sure.
Looking at like $150 minimum, right? Like, oh boy. You know, we've also got like Griselbrand in that Secret Lair series of like the OTJ posters, and then you also had the one from Liliana's Bargain.
The original Igor Kirluk art, that artist, one of my favorite magic artists of all time. Just the perfect, like, demonic evil creature artist
Absolutely.
Ever. I mean, Elish Norn, you guys.
Yeah,
iconic.
Buddy. Don't even
also
get
a
me
baddie.
Started. Guess who's behind me on my wall?
There she is.
The baddie
there
herself.
She is. The queen. The queen E.
The queen. Rest in peace, but also... Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah, it was her
that
time.
That said, I mean, look, I love Bruin decks a ton, and, you know, we're not allowed to play Griselbrand. We're not allowed to play the Nephilim as a commander, but we are allowed to play these Tarkir legends in here. And I'll tell you, nothing like so, preview season is always the best because you're like, okay, which one of these, what's going to scratch an itch for me here, you know? And I love when, like, an unexpected little card does it for me. And I think in the Commander product, one of them for me is...
Oh, no!
Okay.
Telefondo.
Well, I think that's the call we're expecting from Commander Mechanic. So let's get him on the line here. And I'll talk to you guys about this after we come back. Let's check in with Chris. Caller on the line. Who are we talking to today?
Hey, Mikey. First time, long time. It's Chris, and I'm your Commander Mechanic.
Hey, it's my Commander Mechanic, Chris. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, dude. I am doing great. I am really excited to finally call in to Who's the Bullcast. Because I have been sitting by listening to episodes, absolutely itching to talk to you.
Hell yeah, buddy. It's been a minute. I assume things are good out in Ontario and in Canada, the same place I am. It's fun to have some Canadian joy on the podcast.
Yeah, we're practically neighbors in the global scheme of things.
Yeah, basically one dot is big enough for both places.
Yeah, exactly.
We're so close to each other, and yet we only get to see each other at like every other con that, you know, we could make it to, you know?
No kidding. Next time I'm in the city, which is a lot more often these days, we're going to have to meet up because I am on Yonge Street eating all kinds of amazing food up there every
week. I'll have to coordinate, buddy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be down in Toronto probably in February at some time. I think that's the plan for me. Montreal is not far at all. Just like no. 5.5 hour drive, baby.
It's yeah, not much. Exactly. Exactly.
And then you get to have us some games, have us some hangs, call up the Bevs, Mr. Bevers.
Yeah.
Proxy Lab, get the gang all back together.
Exactly, exactly. Get the Canadian crew together. Have uh-huh. some laughs, have some drinks. Good time.
Exactly. Enjoy ourselves. What's so what's going on for you today? You got anything? I know you just went through, I mean, we're dating this pretty hard, but you're literally on the last day of one of your biggest projects of the year every year.
Oh, yeah. November is just wrapping up. That's
exactly.
right. This is my fourth year doing November, if you can believe it. Like saying that just
so
itself
much.
Exhausts me. but yeah, November is my big charity event where I brew a deck a day supporting charity with a supporting piece of content for that deck every yeah, day man. For the month of November. So in the last 45 days, I've brewed 30 unique, distinct decks.
My God, what an undertaking. And to say 4 years, if we're looking 30 decks, 4 years, 120 decks. That's a lot of decks to be putting together for one person over the course of even 10 years, you know?
Yeah. In the course of a single year, I brew close to 85 unique deck lists.
Jesus.
Yeah, with 30 of them being just for November. So
how do you
I'm
avoid
averaging
using a toolbox like it. That's the crazy part.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. It absolutely is. And like if I actually put these decks together in person, would be able to build a house out of all of the decks that I had. And I'm sure that I'd be able to support a deck box company on my own to house all of these decks. But putting these decks together, brewing these decks, even just playing them digitally is a joy. Like I'm averaging close to 2.5 decks a week at one point. And then I take close to the entire month of December off. Because, hey, brewing 30 decks in November is...
Yeah, you've got it out there.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I mean, we got to play, what was it, a couple weeks ago? Just last week or the week before?
Yeah.
And you played, was it two or three of your November decks that you were testing? Just being like, these are coming out late in the game this month, and I just want to see if I got to tweak anything.
Yeah, exactly.
But let's see if anybody... And the thing is, it was like fresh off the heels of like a previous season...
Yeah.
And you'd already brewed something that was like just previewed. And that is, I mean, that's just how you do it, buddy. You're always on top of things. Every preview season, every, let's say, Wizards like announcement kind of stream or event at a con that's being covered by somewhere. You're where I like, I've got my notifications on.
Yeah.
I'm following the thread that you're putting together. You're always on top of it and always ready with this looks great for this kind of deck. And it makes it a lot easier for people to kind of contextualize where a card is likeliest to see play, you know?
Yeah. And I usually live tweet or used to live tweet. Now, I think some people are calling it skeeting. Over
skeeting?
On Blue Sky, which I think
God.
Is hilarious.
that's got to change, right? They
yeah, exactly.
Somebody in marketing
there's
over
no
there to be
lasts.
Like, wait, we can't call it that.
Yeah. But I usually follow all of the announcement cycles and I update people on new cards that come out, largely because I want to be first to be inspired by these.
Yeah, dude, I get that.
Yeah. So when I see this new stuff and when I see these previews come out, when I see people sharing new cards, other creators sharing previews, or whether I see the launch streams by Wizards where we get to see first peeks at some of these cards, it, absolutely, there's going to be something in there that I'm like, yes, that's an idea
absolutely.
Right there. I'm on top of that. And even before deck builders like Moxfield upload some of these cards for you to use in deck builders, I'm already jotting down notes of like, that card goes in there, here's what I want to do as a premise.
I have like so many tabs open on my phone's browser, just like okay, this card was spoiled. I'm going to put this in its own tab and I'm going to come back to it later to remind myself I was inspired by this. It's also like, as somebody who, like those of you who've been listening for a while or who've been reading my column and maybe this is your first episode, welcome to the show. You'll get to know me, or if you do know me, you know that I love an engine, and especially one that involves the graveyard. I'm a big aristocrats guy. I'm a big make a bunch of stuff, they all die, and oops, I win kind of guy. You know, I really love trinkets. I love an engine, that kind of thing. So the moment something gets spoiled that is like even a little bit interesting, I'm like, that's it. That's it. Like in Foundations, there was they went through the Foundations previews and then they just dumped a bunch of Jumpstart stuff. And we're like, hey, here's the whole file. Enjoy. And I'm going through this file like, only give me the new cards. There's a card that nobody's talking about. Wriggling Grub. One in a black. It's a I got to get the actual specs here, but it is only one in a black. It's a 1/1 worm. When it dies, create two black and green worm creature tokens. I was high on Synapse Necromage from LCI, which is two in a black for a 3/1 fungus wizard that when it dies, make two fungus creature tokens with this creature can't block. I mean, you're getting...
Yeah.
I'm sorry. The idea is that I've got this in my Aristocrats deck as three bodies.
Yes.
That just... basically Phyrexian Altar, Ashdod's Altar, doesn't matter. Oh, just need to proc some triggers off of Vicious Shadows, something like that. Here are three little guys that are going to get dealt with. Meanwhile, I'm like, Necrosage is fine. Look at this. It's three mana. You get three bodies. It's all great. What value? The foil looks nice. That's cool. It's a fungus wizard, which is a fun type line. And then they just dump Wriggling Grub as part of the... Oh, here, it's off to the side. Jumpstart 25. People are going to ignore this. It's whatever. It's a new uncommon. Right. Nobody worry about it. Here we go. Meanwhile, I'm freaking out. Like, there's no foil for this. I need it in my blinged out Lizolda deck. It's too perfect.
Yeah,
freaking absolutely. Out over this nothing burger of a card otherwise. And that's what's beautiful. Because I bet when you went through the file for Jumpstart 25, you probably had a couple cards where you were like, I bet nobody's looking at this. And that's exciting.
Absolutely. The one that is like that exact thing for me was Creeping Bloodsucker out of first Jumpstart. Yep. The common that's at the beginning of your upkeep, drain everyone, gain life equal to what was drained.
The common that went up to what, $12 at some point before a reprint?
Yeah. Exactly. Everybody missed that immediately because it was one of those. You know, we are not going to make any fanfare about this. It's just in the text file for like in the spoiler list that they dumped. And I took a look at that and I was like, that's my white whale. That's my Moby Dick right there. I'm going to do everything that I can to get my hands on a copy of that. And it took me close to a year to get a copy of that because it's legitimately a win con in a lot of decks. I know you've got your upkeeps deck. That's so right. You know exactly what I'm doing with that.
I mean, when do you think I got my copy? The thing is, I had apparently done some jump starting and had one from that. So I don't remember when this happened, but I had a pile of jumpstart stuff. And I was like, you know what? Let me take a look at this pile. See if maybe it's in here before I hit send on this face to face order. And then turns out I had a copy and I was like, hey, everybody take a look at this. $11 saved for Mikey. You know what I mean? So I now that I've seen it reprinted a couple times, it's definitely gone down, but it's still pretty, like, it's pricey for an uncommon? Like,
it's a common.
It's a common from Jumpstart where the packs are seeded and stuff. So that was it's an interesting way to do something with new cards.
Yeah.
But I digress. I did want to ask this before I ask you what's going on and why you're calling in, but November, I love to ask you this because I know you're going to have a hard time answering it.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite of the brews? Ah, he's already shaking his head.
Don't ask me to pick my favorite child here, man. Like, the amount of time that I pour into each one of these deck lists is, like, I put as much time into these deck lists as I put into a deck list that I would build for myself and yes. play for myself and keep around. And I play test all of them. Like you and I play tested a couple of them together.
Absolutely.
Right. I sit around with my play group and I do it too. My friends that are remote around the world, I'll play a couple of these brews. We'll sit down on a Saturday and I'll jam three different brews for a little while and just test some of these. And picking my favorite is like, okay, well, which one of these finely tuned machines that you poured hours and hours into is your favorite? And I'm just like, ask an artist which one is their favorite piece, and yeah. they'll struggle to tell you too. I would say if you put my feet to the fire on this one and ask me,
and that's what this is. I'm putting your feet to your fire. I'm saying, Chris, you can only build one of these decks, and you're taking it to a con.
I would have to say, the one that I enjoyed the most and had the most fun playing was the one that you and I played, and that was the Homunculus Horde deck.
That's right.
That one popped off in our game, and I think at one point I had like 20 something Homunculi.
You had a lot.
Yeah. And it was great. It ended up doing the thing. And I picked it up and I played it a bit later with some friends too, and it did the thing again. And even if it makes you like 5, 6, 8, whatever, it can't make you 5 because it doubles. But if it makes you like, you know, 4, 8 copies of a homunculus, like great, it's done the thing. It's a proof of concept right there. And that's what I care about in my decks, is just like, not if I won, not if I like dominated the table or anything, but if the concept for which I put the deck together works, I'm giddy. I'm ecstatic.
Buddy, we're on the same page. Like, this comes up all the time where, you know, I use AD DeFazio as the example because that's that's the one that comes to mind quickest, which is this one time we're about to play a game. And we're shuffling up and we're saying, you know, we just had a long conversation about how we're not really like aiming to win. The win is not the winning of the game, but rather the win is, hey, I've attributed this importance to this action, and that's how I personally will win despite probably losing the game.
Yeah. Right?
So he had a Guillaume Masterchef deck and he wanted to, quote, feed 10 creatures, right? Because you sacrifice a food to tap down a creature and make it indestructible, put it away for a little nap, right? That, there we go. Hey, Guillaume fed a creature. That's fun. That's a fun way to put it. But my final ride with my artifacts deck was that I wanted to assemble Tron, get the Urza lands out, and I didn't have any tutors for lands. Hey, cool. The game, they kept me around in the game longer than I deserved, and I wasn't doing anything. But the moment I top decked, boom, the final land, and I played it, well, whoever had a Tim on board just pinged me to death right after, and I was like, I still won. That's what matters, right?
Right.
So, like you said, the proof of concept. I saw this deck, the Asperia Supreme Judge head is helming the deck, but it's Homunculus Horde, which is the Homunculus from Foundations, 2/2 for 4. Whenever you draw your second card each turn, you create a token copy of this card. And that is fun as hell. I am surprised that Mutate wasn't more part of this.
And as soon as I released the deck and the video, everybody in the comments was, why no Mutate? Can we Mutate?
Because first thought, am I right?
Yeah. Mutate is a very interesting mechanical blind spot for me. Yeah. Because I love making copies of stuff. Like, it is probably my number one, what I would call success condition in Magic. Mm-hmm. If I can make a ton of copies of something, I've done the thing. I mean, I've enjoyed the deck.
For a while, your personalized tokens were copy tokens, right?
Absolutely.
You're a big fan of the copy, and I get it. Your signature deck is too many Garudas. You're making copies of Garudas, and you've got different versions of the deck, if I'm not mistaken. I know you've only got the one that's sleeved up, right? I don't think you have like, So you've also got a couple versions of it. Yeah, I see. I'm on your profile here, and I'm looking up too many Garudas, and you've got multiple versions of them to track the updates.
Yes.
That's how important this deck is. And it is a clone deck with clone token copies and real copies. And
yes,
absolutely. I'm with you. I love that. I love it.
Yeah. And like Mutate has always been this kind of blind spot for me in that realm. Like I make copies of stuff. I love making copies of stuff, but Mutate is never the first thing that I think about. I always think about what is the path to being able to make as many copies of something as possible, not make the thing that you're copying better.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's always secondary or tertiary to me.
I hear
meaning
you.
Mutate stuff always ends up getting cut because it only matters if you're actually doing the thing already.
Exactly.
And I always tend to include things that help you do the thing better or more consistently than make the thing that you're doing even better.
Well,
right?
That's because you're the commander mechanic. You're here to tune things up, you know?
I love making sure that people are able to do the thing with their decks. What are they looking to do? What are they trying to do? And then making that as efficient as possible is the big thing. Like we were talking about whether success in a game is winning or not. I like to think of my decks as having success conditions, not win conditions to them, because you don't need to win a game to be successful in Commander. And that is my big ethos here is when you put a deck together, what is success in a game for you? And for some people, success is going to be winning the game. That's perfectly fine. That
awesome.
If that's the case, hey, more power to you. But for some people, success in a game is not winning the game. Success in a game is taking X action, doing Y multiple times, whatever it might be. And it doesn't matter whether you win or lose because you had a good time doing something. Your proof of concept works and it shows you that you can put together a machine that does the thing. And that is joy. That's what it is to me. That's joy to me.
Agreed. And then also showing that off to a group of people and sharing that is also a joy. Because like I'm a big fan of having to ask permission to see a card I've never heard of.
Right.
You know what I mean? I love to play against somebody where I'm like, hold on a second, what is
that?
Let me get a closer look at that, please. And then I read this card and I'm like, and my eyes widen because I'm finally figuring out, wait, what's this doing here? Okay, I see it. Oh my God, that's so fun.
Yeah.
And it's just like last night I hopped into the EDH Rec Patreon Discord. Somebody was looking for a game and I was like, I finally get to say yes to one of these. Played against Lenny Woolley, our sweet angel Lenny.
Oh, yeah.
And two other new pals, Serena and the subject of this conversation, Jeff. Jeff has a deck headed by Iname Death's Aspect.
Oh, with a Kamigawa hidden classic.
Exactly. ETBs, search your library for any number of spirit creatures and put them into your graveyard. Now, here's the thing. I'm not going to give away what's happening because Jeff is going to play a lot of people. And this is a fun deck for him to reveal. I'm never going to tell you what it is, but when you find out and you do want to talk about it, I'm all ears. It is one of the more fun experiences I've had lately in the game. It's he says I take it out for when I play with people for the first time to give them an idea of what I do. It's a lot of fun. And I think that this is a perfect example of the success condition because he didn't end up winning the game. He did not win. But when he did the thing, we all felt like, sick, this is great. And you could kind of hear it in his voice for the rest of the game being like, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty happy with this. You know, it's and so that's an exciting thing where like, I think the deck's win rate is probably in the floor. You know what I mean? It's it can't be, you know, even a 10% win rate would be like, cool. You know what I mean? But his success rate is probably sky high. And I think that's what keeps a deck around, you know? I can look at my Prosper deck and think my win rate with it is pretty high. But that's because it's a Prosper deck. Let's not kid ourselves. You know, throw a ham sandwich in a Prosper deck, it'll do well. But the thing about the Prosper deck that I want out of it is that I want to play over the top. I want to get to a critical mass and play over the top and then take the win that way.
Yeah.
And so I've had that happen a bunch of times because while I'm playing, I'm prioritizing it. That's my fun.
Yes.
And frankly, that's the part that's going to get me to pull out the deck and play it. So like you said, efficiently getting to the point to do the thing that you want and focusing on success rate, that's a good way to keep your decks around. That's a good way to focus your decks in a way that makes you feel like you want to play it again, or not that it's taking up room on your shelf. You know?
Absolutely. One of my favorite brews that I've put together that is in that wheelhouse is one that I put together earlier this year, and it's my Mothman, the Wise Mothman, Slime Against Humanity deck. So it's the Wise Mothman, Slime Against Humanity, but the point is that you're trying to exile all of the Slime Against Humanities from your deck, because Slime Against Humanity counts itself in exile. So that's use a bunch of the cards that you never see in Commander that exile all cards of the same name. And you use that on yourself. And suddenly you're exiling like 40 cards from your deck, and you're left with a pile of like 60 cards that are super efficient. And any copies of Slime Against Humanity you've left in your deck are suddenly making three mana 40/40s with trample.
That's so funny.
Yeah,
that's so silly.
And I put it together for just a goof on a stream with Alan, Mental Misplay. Because he was like, "Hey, show me the spice," and I was like, "You want spice? Yeah, I'll give you spice." It popped off in the first game that I played with it, where like on turn two, I had exiled all the Slime Against Humanities from my deck. And I was like, okay, well, like this has done the thing. I'm happy with this. I can successfully lose to any combo at the table now, because all I've done is cast a Slime Against Humanity, made a 40/40 trampling slime in a game of CEDH. And now everybody on turn three is begging me not to take them out of the game with a swing.
That's so f***ed up. Sorry, Ken.
But yeah, it's just one of those like, what weird thing do I want to do with a deck? And then how do I make that as efficient as possible? I love those kind of brews. And one of the things that I love doing with those kind of brews is milling. And
I am Garuda being your signature deck. This tracks big time.
Exactly. That's the big thing. Like, my Too Many Garudas deck is a mill deck, and I love mill because it is a challenge win con, right? It's not a reduce someone's life total. It's not a self mill Thassa's Oracle kind of thing. Right. It is a, you're essentially giving yourself an uphill battle, because now you're looking at a life total of 100 per each opponent, as opposed to 40 per each opponent. And you've got to find a way to deal with that. So I love mill as a challenge. The problem is, when I sit down with a mill deck, or I sit down with my Too Many Garudas deck, people hate mill. So, I mean, I want to ask you the question. The reason why I'm calling in is,
seamless.
am I the bolus because I love playing mill decks? And hey, are people right to hate on this archetype for what I feel like is very little reason?
So we've established a couple things this episode. Let's see what to tackle first. The idea of a success condition rather than a win condition definitely speaks to those who, I mean, it definitely helps those who love mill. Because it automatically gets you like, if I can mill everybody's, like half everybody's library, then I essentially would have killed at least one person, and I decided to spread the love, and I had that power, and then, you know, there's a level of that.
The copium of, exactly. Oh, well, I could have taken a player out.
But I decided to play around, you know. Here's the thing, Chris, I love mill. Yep. I am a graveyard guy. I love a graveyard. If I'm playing against mill, I say thank you very much. Yeah. You know, it's like, sure, if you knock out every one of my recursion pieces, then that sucks. Like, I'm not, you know, there's nothing I could do about that. But then I have the rest of my deck to play with. So the idea is, people get mad at mill because they see what, quote, could have been. And that is that what they think they're losing out on, which is just like, well, how about you make peace with the fact that it never was? It's the way your deck is right now is it's like a Schrodinger's cat paradox idea.
That's where the you're thing. Like,
I don't like mill because my top card could be my Phyrexian Altar. And it's like, yeah, well, if it is, then maybe your next card is, I don't know, Greater Hoof Behemoth with a full board. You know,
yeah.
you could just be moving your way towards a win con. Instead, you're getting mad at pieces going away when you're like, ah, man, I wanted to play with that. And it's like, you still can. There's first of all, there's other games. Second of all, maybe there's some built-in recursion in your deck that'll make this work. Like
the way that I tell people to think about it, and the fact that people don't think about this is one of those things that frustrates me, is like, if I've milled a card from you and you say, oh, I really wanted to play that, or oh, I don't get to play that card this game. What if that card was the bottom card of your library?
Thank you.
Just didn't see it all game anyway.
Yes.
This is, you're playing a 100 card deck. Chances are you're only going to see about 25 cards in a game. Mm-hmm. So if I mill 75 cards, you weren't going to see those cards this game anyway. Think of it that way.
I mean, that's a good way to put it. But I will say, the difference between the card I wanted being the last card of my deck versus it being milled from the top of my deck is this this fallacy of like the perception of possibility. Because it's not like it's like the game actions led to this anyway. Shuffling is, you know, technically a game action in the sense that some cards tell you to shuffle and it's necessary to shuffle your deck. So if anything, same things causing the thing to be at the bottom or in your graveyard. You have more access to a card in your graveyard most of the time than you do in your library, unless you're running tutors. So there's all that. But the idea is, the difference between it being on the bottom of the library versus you milling them is, you did that to me. It wasn't fate.
It's the locus of control is what it's called, right? An internal or external locus of control is, the internal locus of control is, I chose not to play that card. The external locus of control is, somebody else forced me to not play that card. And that's where a lot of people lose control.
In the external locus of control, you've got two prongs. You've got, somebody did it, so this. And then there's the shuffling, which is, it's randomized, it's fate, it's like, you know, the universe didn't let me play.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So there's, if it the way the way it is, it's kind of like the way people surrender themselves to the random or the variance of the game, they refuse to do that to their opponent, which I understand in a sense, because imagine equating your opponent to the universe.
Right.
So it is kind of like the way I'm talking about it now, I kind of think I'm making an argument against it. But I do think that, like, I understand what you're saying. If it's on the bottom of your library, you weren't going to see it anyway. Now, guess what? You get to see the pretty art in your graveyard.
Well, essentially, I have done you the favor of turning an unknown quantity into a known quantity, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't have been able to, as a new player playing against you, see all of these great cards in your deck if we played a game normally. Now, I get to see everything that you've milled. I get to see the choices of art that you've made, the treatment of cards. I can see what you've included in your deck, which is one of the reasons why I love mill, because I love people just showing me their deck. Mm-hmm. So if I mill you and I'm like, oh, that's a sweet card for this deck, I wouldn't have thought of that, and it ends up getting milled rather than played, everybody's like, oh, well, I could have played it against you. And I'm like, well, no, you couldn't have. Right? Like, okay, if this was on the bottom card of your library, if it was in the last 10 cards of your library,
exactly,
I wouldn't have seen it anyway. Now I at least get to see it, or I've done you the favor of, it is now accessible to you through recursion or whatever it might be. A lot of people fail to think of their graveyard as another set of resources. And I know I'm preaching to the choir for you here.
Buddy, you don't got to tell me twice.
Right. But there are a lot of folks that are like, oh, it's in my graveyard, it's gone forever. And those are players that are like, okay, maybe they don't like playing with their graveyard. Maybe they don't like any kind of recursion. But your graveyard is a known quantity. And there's this whole playing to your outs thing. If we get into like more of a CDH mindset, more of a how can I win the game, is how many outs do I have in my deck? How many outs do I have access to? Your graveyard is essentially knowing and a known quantity. I have access to these resources now in my graveyard, meaning I'm not going to draw them. So if I'm playing to my outs, I can exclude whatever's in my graveyard now. It helps make the known knowledge greater, that public information greater. And from a game theory standpoint, you really want, you want to obfuscate as much information as possible. So nobody knows what's in your hand. Nobody knows what you're drawing. So a lot of people see your graveyard being public information as, okay, now they know what I'm trying to do here. Now I have lost that edge. Now that I've lost that advantage.
I mean, see, here's the thing. I'm a blabbermouth, so I never have that advantage. I'll sit down and be like, guys, this deck does the one thing that all my decks do. Okay, that's it.
I do the same thing. I mean, before I play any deck that mills as a win con, I sit down, and at this stage, I have to be like, hey, I am trying to mill the table.
Yeah.
Does anybody have an issue with that? And honestly, there are a lot of folks that are like, not a big fan of mill. Can you play something else? Okay, great. I'll swap the deck. But more times than not, people are like, I don't care. Just sit down and mill. It's the folks that like the folks that say they're okay with it and then mid game start complaining about it. That's where I'm like, am I the bolus for being very clear about what I'm trying to do and people still not enjoying it?
I think that there's an element of like I don't like losing at when the last God of War game came up, there's like these rune stones that you find, and it starts this giant boss battle that is a nightmare, and you can find them so early that when you're not leveled up enough or you don't have all the tools to be able to beat this boss, but you think, well, I could find it now. Maybe I can beat it now. And you try and you fail so badly. And eventually you get to a point where you're like, okay, I think I can do it. And you keep like bashing your head against this wall because you still don't have the one thing that you don't know.
Yeah.
If I say I want to play against a mill deck and I'm fine with it, I'm still going to be going up against a mill deck in the sense that if I'm losing to this boss battle and I'm still doing everything I can with the limited resources that I now have, or maybe I'm missing something, there is like an element of like, I have to solve this puzzle faster and I have to solve this puzzle with less, that will fire off maybe a little bit of frustration, but it is part of the joy of playing a game like this. The idea is that you're restructuring the puzzle of the game. Like you're doing like, that's every game action is meant to do that. That's why enchantments are so interesting to me. They tell you that you have new rules. That's like, it's basically, so the idea is that like, now guess what? Every turn you're going to have some stuff just go away, or you're going to have some stuff that is now available to you, and you have to like think on your feet. Things are changing. What goes here, what goes there. Your plan is still online. It just requires a little bit more of like a step back. And so I'd be lying if I didn't like get upset playing these boss battles. You know what I mean? There was one night, one in particular, I was like, I'm max leveled out. I couldn't beat it. And I was upset about it. And my girlfriend had got home after work and she was like, do you want to hang out? And I'm like, I need to beat this. I need it. And it took me another 45 minutes before I was like, okay, I got it. It's done. But the idea is that I kept losing, and I kept losing similar ways. And part of the joy was getting to a point where I was like, I think I can get there. I think I understand this better, and I'm figuring it out, and I found it. And I think that's something that people miss out on with a strategy like mill, strategies like mill, like discard, like a bunch of different kinds of oppressive strategy. Playing against stacks, perfect example here. People forget that stacks is going to change the game in a way that you're not expecting.
Right.
It's going to have to make you think harder about sequencing your stuff. And it basically, it does pull the rug out from under you, and it makes you have to reassess things. But that's also part of the joy of playing Magic. I want to do this thing. How do I do this thing? Well, now I have 16 hurdles ahead of me. I can clear a couple of these hurdles. I can flat out destroy some of them. That's exciting.
Yeah.
To figure out how you can survive and how you can win in the face of some sort of in the face of, like, I guess three opponents is like enough adversity for anybody, right? But like, if one of them is really holding up the table, then you're looking at a team at this point,
right?
Trying to get it done. And I don't know. It just feels silly to get so upset about a play style that you genuinely feel anger. Or right. Genuinely feel that way. But a little frustration while playing the game, I feel like that's fair. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, think of it like any Soulsborne game out there. Like, you're going to get frustrated going up against this boss battle or going up against enemies. Or you're going to say, like, how did I lose against this, like, no-name enemy when I just took down this named boss? Right. Yeah, it's going to happen in games. Like, somebody's going to come out of nowhere. Somebody's going to get you. You're going to lose a game. You're going to mill a card that you wish that you could play this game. There's always going to be next time. You know, you go back to the drawing board. You try again. You try again. And, you know, that's exactly the kind of thing that came up recently. I was over with Mudsta recording some gameplay with him and was playing my Mindskinner deck. And the first game that I played with Mindskinner, it popped off. And I think I milled 80 cards from everyone at the table.
Yes.
But it was down to, like, the first time that I milled 20 cards from everyone at once. Everybody kind of sat up and took notice and was like, oh, okay, we're going to have to do something about that.
Yeah,
and it took them four turns to do something about that. So I ended up making it through the majority of everyone's deck.
Right.
But it's that, like, hey, we kind of need to unify here. There's a problem at the table. I wasn't changing life totals at all. I was just removing resources from people, and not even resources in play. Strategies like discard or land destruction remove resources in play. And you brought up a great point that I love, and that is that Magic and the cards that you play are about changing the rules of Magic. So you're normally only allowed to play one land per turn. There are cards that change that. You're normally only allowed to play one card or draw one card per turn. You play cards that change that. And things like stacks and things like mill, they don't change the rules of the game necessarily, but they prevent you from changing the rules of the game. So something that says you can't draw more than one card every turn, that's not limiting you from doing something. It's saying you cannot change the rules of the game now, because normally you're only allowed to draw one card per turn. It's just making sure that you can't swing the balance of the game or change the rules of the game. And mill's a lot like that. I'm not reducing life totals. I am just reducing possibility. Right. And a lot of people say, oh, you have just reduced 20 cards of possibility from me. And some people might equate that to a life total instead, which is great. Look at it that way. But don't look at it as you have now removed my favorite cards from the game. You are now preventing me from playing those cards. Again, look at it as those are cards you are never going to play this game anyway. I'm begging people, please shift your perspective around that.
Especially in this game.
Yes.
That's how this goes. I'm playing a mill deck. You'll have to make peace with a couple things. I will say that you have a lot of points really down packed, and like, you have had to think about this and find ways to make it palatable to a lot of people, because it seems like there's been some resistance to playing the mill decks, but I haven't had that kind of experience personally. I have a mono blue mill deck helmed by Una, Queen of the Fae. So technically, yes, it's Dimir, but it's mono blue. And yes, I do have Dire Undercurrents and Ashiok, the hybrid planeswalker. Just, you know, fun little flay. Hey, look at this. Technically blue.
Yeah.
Technically only blue. And that's fun. And when people play against the mill deck, they're like, well, he's basically gonna be here to be like this. I'm barely a player when I play the deck.
Right.
I essentially am there to be like this weird enchantment that says every turn that happens here is just going to try to mill you. And that's it. And I have nothing else going on.
Yeah.
And so when people sit down and agree to that, they're just like, well, they don't touch me. Or if they're really annoyed, they come for me and I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that that's one of the challenges people have playing against my Too Many Garudas deck is that my Too Many Garudas deck is about making so many copies of Garuda that I mill everybody out. And a lot of the time I'm making non-legendary copies of Garuda. So I have a bunch of 6/6 Krakens too.
Big old boys.
I never attack with them, but people look at a wall of 6/6 Krakens and they look at 75 cards in their graveyard and they're like, the hopelessness sets in. And, you know, a lot of folks don't look at it as a puzzle anymore. They look at it as this is a foregone conclusion. And that's what really makes me feel bad about playing something like my favorite deck.
I see is, what you're saying.
Yeah, is not a how do we stop this from happening? It's an it's already happened. Why are we bothering anymore?
Meanwhile, anybody could top deck a Living Death and really make this game pop off. You know?
And it's happened before. It absolutely has. It's also happened where somebody has played a Douthi Voidwalker ahead of my popping off with Garuda, and suddenly everyone's graveyards are exiled now, and that one player has a choice of everything that's been exiled to play. Right? Like, it's massive, because if I don't immediately win the game, if I don't get to the point where I'm deterministic and I'm making enough copies of Garuda and enough spins of the wheel to mill everybody out right away, then I'm giving everyone the opportunity to fight back. But a lot of folks see it as, what's the point of fighting back if you've already milled half of my deck? Or what's the point of fighting back if you already have 5/6/6 Krakens out? The game's basically over at this point. And that's where I feel bad about playing something like my favorite deck.
I say, you know, so here's the thing. People will talk about being at one life, being, oh, the one life is all the life you need in the game, because it means you're still winning. You know what I mean? It means you're still in.
Chip in a chair if you're a poker player.
Right. There we go. That's what I'm talking about. It's like it's literally Dana Roach will say, if there's a card out there that can have me pay 39 life to draw 39 cards and I'm at 40 life, I'm going all in. That's what it is. And because it means that you're going to end up playing those cards and you could still win, because as long as you're at one and everybody else is at zero, you're winning.
Yep.
And I don't understand how that logic hasn't ported over to mill, because while like, yes, you could be very limited, but it's the same thing that happens to, like, I'm a black player. I'll play a card that requires life payment to draw a card. Can't play those anymore. I drew a shock land when I'm at 7 life. Ooh, maybe I'll play a different land. You know what I mean? Like, it's this kind of thing where, like, you just have to adjust yourself.
Yeah.
And you still have 20 cards in your library, and maybe you're going to get milled out next turn.
Yeah.
But now you have what you have in hand. You have an idea of what could be left in the deck because you have the rest of your deck in the graveyard. How about think about what the possibilities are and see if you can pull it out?
And that's really it. Some of the best stories about games are, you know, we're all down to 5 cards left in our library, and one guy top decks the one win con he's got left, and he wins from nothing left in his library.
Yes.
I've been at points, I think one of my favorites is playing against Davey. And she and I were both playing our Garuda decks, so we were milling the table like crazy, and everybody else is moaning and groaning, and they're looking at their graveyards and they're saying, I'm out. Like, I have no win cons left. I'm out. Yeah. And Davey and I are staring at each other with like 2 cards left in our library, both wondering, like, does the other person have a shuffle effect left? Does the other person have enough to reset the clock at this point? And we're staring down each other. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to call her bluff here. And I'm going to assume that her shuffle effect, like her Eldrazi Titan, for instance, is in her hand, not in her library. I'm going to go for the mutually assured destruction on this one. Mill me out on my turn, but she draws from an empty library on her turn. And I play my Garuda, and the last card in her library is a Kozilek, and it reshuffles everything.
Damn.
And that was, I'm like, that that's game. That's game. I'm out. I'm done. And it was just one of those, like, if you have a card left in your library, fight. Fight for your life here, because it makes it a nail biter. It's like being in a video game and being down to like a sliver of life. And so is your the boss that you're fighting. So is your opponent. You fight for that last hit there. You have to do it. And it makes for a thrilling game. It really does. But a lot of folks see all these cards leaving and they get so hopeless about it. They immediately get pessimistic about it. But
so think about this, right? We've been talking about it abstractly for a little bit. And then the moment you've got an actual story, it's very detailed. You've got the highlights. It's something that you remember well and vividly. This is what is possible when you're playing Magic, and there's an there's this adversary to conquer, or there's this like hurdle to jump over. This is what happens when you get to put yourself in a position where you're like, I need to do this or it's done. You can experience these stories that you then tell for a long time. Everybody has a story of chaos warping something and the person flipping the same card. Like, it's how it amount that if you've been playing long enough, at least. I don't know how much Chaos Warp sees play anymore these days, because there's so much efficient removal. The game's gotten too good. Chaos Warp used to be a mainstay in my playgroup, and there would be games where, you know, we'll play a Chaos Warp and we'll be like, watch him flip it over. Watch him flip over the thing. And we'd say it every time, but it wouldn't happen. But you know what we remember? The one time it did happen, and it was Avacyn Angel of Hope. Excuse me? Avacyn Angel of Hope gets Chaos Warped and comes back into play. Everybody was screaming. Everybody yelling at the top, freaking out. We needed to get up from our chairs and pace around. We needed a break. Nothing's going to top that moment, because we have that story now. I'm not going to stop thinking about this. There's so many things that happen in a game of Magic that you're creating these memories that you're going to be able to access and be like, this is why I play the game. So a moment like the one you've just described, where you're like, I'm playing this mill deck. It's mill deck versus mill deck. I have to take this shot. Let's see if it'll happen.
Yeah.
You got to fight. You got to do it. Because if you don't, guess what happens?
Yeah.
She could have scooped. She could have been like, I guess I don't have it. You know? Instead, she knew it was in there for sure. She had to.
Yeah, exactly.
And she's like,
exactly.
I don't know. You want to do it? I'll play mine next turn. You know.
Yeah, and that's the mentality that poker players go by. I mentioned chip in a chair, and that mentality is you aren't out of the game, you aren't off of the table until you're out of your last chip. Exactly. So, like you were saying from Dana, as long as you got one life, you got fight left in you. As long as you have one chip in poker, you got fight left in you. Look at it as long as you got one card left in your library, you got fight left in you. Do something about it.
Mm-hmm. You can still draw that card, and it could be exactly what you need.
Exactly.
You're telling me that you won't be able to pull something out with one card? There are cards that win games, and they're just one card. That's the game, baby. That's Magic. I love this game so much, dude.
It's amazing. It's amazing every time. Every time.
It really is. I don't know. I've tipped my hand in terms of what I'm voting on Bolas' verdict, and I've been doing that more and more because we are restructuring the podcast a little bit. But I do think that does it for us. Chris, do you want to tell everybody where they can find you, what they should check out, and anything you'd like to plug? Now is the time. Our listeners should know you as their Commander Mechanic, and it's time to show them where they can find you for that.
Absolutely. Well, hey, folks, I'm Chris, and I'm your Commander Mechanic. You can find me everywhere content is made. I go by Commander Mechanic on every platform. Look for the orange wrench. That's me. If I'm to plug anything, please, please go check out my November lists. Whether it's checking out all of the content that I've made on YouTube around it, or whether it's just going to my Moxfield profile, I have put together 30 decks in 30 days. I guarantee if you're looking for some kind of inspiration for a new brew, I've got it in my profile for you. Even just as a starting point, even just as a concept, it's there. And this is ranging from like the Marvel Secret Lair cards, through to the new foundations and jumpstart stuff, through to old stuff that I'm taking new looks at. Mm-hmm. And I've got budget decks, I've got CEDH brews, I've got everything of all levels there. Honestly, if you're looking for inspiration, I'm the place to go.
100%. Chris is a prolific deck builder and super insightful. And I love watching what your stuff and going through your deck techs and seeing, well, I would have never thought of that. And let's see how it works in practice. And then you can head over to your site and you're like, well, the playtester's right there. Let's see what this is like. It makes it a lot easier to just get inspired. If you're ever in a rut, this is the best way to go about it. Go over to Commander Mechanics profile and pick a deck. I guarantee you'll have some fun with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If your favorite deck is stalled out too, if it's just not doing the thing, I bet I've built it already. It's somewhere on my profile. Take a look at that right now. I think, what was it? I announced the number just the other day. Yes, I have 329 decks in my Moxfield profile right now.
That's a lot of decks.
80 of which from this year alone. So if you're looking for anything, I've got it, whether it's on my YouTube channel or my Moxfield profile. Yeah, check it out.
Totally. And make sure if you're on a platform that can't have that many letters in Commander Mechanic, you can shorten Commander to CMDR and you'll find them. Yeah, that's the I was looking for you the other day and I was like, why isn't it come? Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting that it's too long.
Too many characters. Yeah,
there you go. Well, I love you, buddy. Thanks for calling in. We're going to head back into the booth and have a chat with Morgan about whether or not you are the Bolas. What a pleasure it is to talk with Chris, my sweet, sweet boy. Thank you so much for calling in and chatting about Mill. I mean, we know Chris, your Commander Mechanic. Check him out online. Really just always looking for those synergies. An incredible person to just hand a deck to and go, fix this for me. And he'll pull out five cards and be like, you got to tell me if you have any personal attachments to these ones and if that's why they're in. Otherwise, they got to go. You know, he can be very direct and brutal with the cuts, but that's what you need if you're looking at optimizing. Chris is a sweetheart and a sweetie pie and a fellow Canadian, and I love him the bits. You got to check out all of his November decks from this year and years past. And as we approach the end of the year, slowly, we're not there yet. As we approach November, I want you to set yourself like a little subscribe and like a notification bell for that time of year, because when he's got those videos up, they're very fun. He likes to do like a mix of like something new and something old. And I really, really appreciate what you do, Chris. So thank you so much for joining me, chatting with me today about Mill, your favorite. If you can't tell, by the way, we've had that recorded for some time. And the show is working on trying to find a way to keep it current while also making it through our backlog. So heads up, we're doing our best here with a biweekly schedule and people that want to chat today, looking at a release date sometime in 2026. You know what I mean? We're figuring stuff out. So you'll be the first to hear it when we figure it out completely.
But hey, nostalgia sells. Said, so until then, let's keep hawking it.
Morgan, let me ask you, before we get Chris's question, how did the votes break down on verdict?
Oh, man. All right. Let's see. Vote system is as follows. My vote for whether or not Commander Mechanic is going to be the Bolas or not will count for one. And Mike's will count for three.
That's right. That's how many Perfect. I get. 3 points.
Three of them. Three for now, one.
Morgan, let's go ahead. What is Chris's question?
Well, Chris, the Commander Mechanic, wants to know, am I the Bolas for loving Mill? It's a loaded question.
It's a tough one to answer when it's just couched like that, isn't it?
We can pick that one apart from a psychological perspective. We can do some math with this, I think, right?
Yeah. We did a couple different angles in his defense of it, like the hurdles that you have to jump over while you're a Mill player dealing with people who hate Mill, That's important. That's why are people to, like,
who would ever say, I, you know, you guys talked about it and said, like, you know, he Chris is playing against people who are like, oh man, I was gonna play with that, and like, but what does that mean? What, you're gonna draw it next turn? Oh, you can't draw it now because I did a thing. Like, that's the way you play the game, right? Like, that creature was supposed to win me. That you destroyed my creature. What the heck, man? Like, I have no more creatures in this deck. What? So maybe I'm coming at it. I'm gonna get it out there right away. I don't think Chris is the bolus, because if somebody said that I milled away their thing, man, I'm just playing the game, girl. What you mean you're gonna play that next turn? Yeah, I don't want you to play next turn. Don't do it. Put it in the graveyard, or be Joey Schultz. Get yourself a reanimate. Bring back better. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. For me, it's like, oh hell yeah, dude, mill my ass. I'll take it. Like, I will reanimate all day. Gimme. That's my favorite part. Give me the graveyard. That's my favorite place to be.
The trick that the advice I'll give everybody is what I do is I always bring Disa the Restless. Just in case there's some guy like this who's like really mill happy, because I love it, girl. And you know, even if you get like a whole whiff on Disa, you're like, guess what? I got a card. I'm going to put more of my stuff in the graveyard, bro.
Damn, Morgan out here metagaming.
Yes, you got to get your opponent's heads. Got to get in their heads a little bit more. I think that's why. Yeah, I think Chris is right on the money here with, you know what? You can't love mill too much. You can love it too little.
I think that his what was it, the possibility, the promise of possibility, how do you put it? It was the idea that, like, his reframing it of it was, hey, if I mill something, what if you just pictured it was at the bottom of your library? And of course people will fire back with, well, it wasn't. And it's like, yeah, okay, so then picture.
But you never knew until just now.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know, there's something about it. And it also is like, when he said, I love to see all the different treatments of cards in your deck and getting to see your whole deck, that's kind of like, okay, buddy,
it's a little vicious, but I know when I heard that, I said, girl, then you got it. Like, cause that Disa deck is the collector edition. That's all foiled out. So I'm like, you can barely see those things half the time. You're like, what the hell does that say? Need some sunglasses to read those ripple foils, but I'm all about it. If you want to look at, like, take it, check it out. Take the graveyard.
Honestly, straight up, that's like, I agree with him. I've seen this Garuda deck in action, and it does mill like crazy. And honestly, it's so much fun to see it happen. Like, it is. I think the people who are annoyed with it are, you know, when, let's say you're waiting for a land drop the whole game and you keep milling lands. Okay, well, that does suck for you. But hey, let me just put it this way.
That's showbiz, baby.
That's magic, baby. Exactly. It's literally like, hey, I get screwed all the time when I'm playing Magic. Not necessarily because of how I built my deck. You know, if I'm playing 17 lands in a limited event and I still get screwed, that's not on me, dog. That sucks. That's the luck of the draw, and you're just unlucky. You can't forget that luck is also part of it. You're milling from the top of your library. You don't know what's supposed to be on top of that. That's part of the fun, getting to see all of it, you know? And also, if you do know what's on top of your library, I don't want it there anymore. You put it there, probably, and that means it's strong. And I'm playing because I want to win. I want to play a little fun. Unless it's like you put something on top that I want to see happen, then I'll try not to mill you on it, but... Anyway, I can't save that information for later. I'll say I don't think he's the bolus for liking mill either. I think if you were to show up at tables and kind of force it on tables, then that's bolus behavior. Like, every one of your decks is a mill deck. I actually talked about my mono blue mill deck with Una, Queen of the Fae, which I've since dismantled and turned into the Master Transcendent. And also I have Lazav Wearer of Faces, which is also somewhat of a mill deck. So, like, I had scratched that itch and haven't been reaching for my mono blue mill deck and needed a change there. So I just took it apart. But I'll say, like, some of the most fun games I've had come from that feeling that Chris was talking about against Davey, where, you know, you don't know who's got a Titan in there, or, like, you don't know who's got, like, a Living Death they're about to play, you know, after you've milled them for so much and not yourself. So, yeah, I really don't mind Mill, and I don't think Chris is a bolus. I loved the conversation surrounding it, all the different ways you can kind of trick yourself into having a more positive time with it. Like, let me just say this. If I'm playing a non-graveyard deck, I have a Jeskai Legendary theme deck where I have like two recursion pieces and they're very minimal. They're not great. They are just two cards that bring back some stuff and that's it. Whereas most of my decks are like mainly graveyard focused. In that deck, if I got milled, would I be salty about some stuff? I probably would. I probably wouldn't be the most stoked to see like cards I'm excited to play go away. But I think the way that Chris framed things makes me feel better about it. Like, yeah, dude, like, look at what you got. Like, look at what you took away. That would have been bad for you. That would have been so sick for me. That would have been bad for you. You'd made the right move. Also, look at the sick treatment. Also, like, you know,
variance is just a part of it's just a part of the game. I mean, you can find a silver lining in everything. Like, I'm like consistently 100%. Mana screwed in like 100% of the games that I play. Please mill me at least one times during the game to get me through like a glob of garbage. Like, because think of the times, like these same people who are complaining, oh, I could have played that card. They've had those experiences too, where it's just like, yeah, get the top 6,000 cards of your library and it's all lands. It's just a full whiff. Like, you love it when that happens. So don't act like it doesn't happen.
Come on now.
Got to take the good with the bad.
Yeah, you can't be stoked about a mill versus upset about a mill when mill is a thing that happens. So not the bolus. Thank you for calling, Chris. We love you very much. Commander Mechanic, check him out. Make sure you follow, subscribe to him. Subscribe to the channel and everything. Morgan Sanchez, your vote was not the bolus. Mikey C, my vote not the bolus. Sounds like we got ourselves a true Ugin.
True Eugene.
And that doesn't feel right when Ugin is on Altar of the Brood and that
things are happening
one. So some people are going to be mad at this decision. I can already tell, because milling is a polarizing subject. But I will say, I think what Chris brought to the table is great. I already came in, bought in on mill kind of like as a tool for myself as a graveyard guy. I love mill just fine. Like, I play mill. I enjoy milling myself. All that rules for me, I get it. But I feel like the way that Chris approaches it and had these like ways of thinking about it that could be adopted by players who are maybe apprehensive about mill, that's what the show is like truly about. That's literally when I set out to make this podcast, that's literally what I wanted. Here's a pet peeve, or here's a story where I might have been the villain. How do we approach it to kind of make that a little bit easier on myself or on other players? And I think if we're looking back on episodes of Am I the Bowlcast that achieved a goal, this one's part of that pantheon. I appreciate what Chris brought to the table. Shout out, Commander Mechanic. Oh boy, what a good one. I think that's a good place to leave it, right? Do we have anything else we want to talk about, Morgan?
Wait. You got to turn the brew brain back on for Tarkir Dragonstorm from before the call. Your brew brain was going for something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. I could talk about some new cards.
Ooh. New cards.
You go first.
Me go first.
Tell me about what's caught your attention. Let's do one legendary creature. So, like, a commander and a non-legendary. Mm-hmm. Let's go commander versus non-commander card in the sense of, like, can be your commander versus not your commander.
Sure.
And then let's each pick one and call that an episode. How about that?
Let's do it.
Party. Okay, Morgan Sanchez, you're on the clock. Who do you like?
Oh my gosh. So first of all, Beator, Ancestor's Voice, number one, love, smooch, yeah, best card I've seen in my entire life. Abzan Gurley, let's get it, dude. I am going to make a deck with this guy.
Reanimator.
Like, immediately. Done. Like, fantastic effects. Flying Lifelink is just a trigger for me. Like, I'm all in. 10 out of 10.
Yes.
After that, I want to do like a quick list of my top three other cards that are really good for
me. Damn, okay.
They are Rock Curse Rakshasha, which is a mono black mythic demon with trample and decayed.
Damn.
That allows you to renew for XBB, exile it from your graveyard, put a decayed counter on each of X target creatures. Activate as a sorcery. Banger. Cost two mana? Stop. 11 out of 10.
I mean, look, that renewability is probably way stronger than the actual body on this thing. Because decayed just decayed means that the creature can't block, and if it attacks, you have to sacrifice at the end of combat. You end up with a renew, like you activate renew to put a decayed counter on key pieces on an opponent's board. First of all, if they ever attack with it, gone, forget about it. But also, now they can't block with it, so are they open for business? What are we talking about? Love that card. So
there's
sick.
There's some wickedness that can go on with that.
Such imaginative design in this card. It feels like one of those cards that somebody was like, I'm putting this on the table, and I think the team, like, applauded. You have to assume the design team took a look at that and went, that's incredible. Well done. Well done. And just gave whoever slammed it down a little clap. Oh. Really great.
My nostalgia trigger outside of the Siege Rhino clone is going to be a Mardu card, which is Bone Cairn Butcher. Awesome uncommon with Mobilize 2, attacking tokens. Attacking tokens!
Yes.
Folks, you control, have Death Touch. Yeah. She's ready.
It's a throwback to the, what was it called? The Bone Cairn Demon? Or the, what was
Bone,
it called? It was
Bone
from
Tokyo. Butcher.
Boren Horde Butcher. That's right. It was a demon from Tarkir.
Butcher of the Horde. Sorry.
Butcher of the Horde. We got the name. All I know is that I can picture the art perfectly, and I know it's a 5/4 demon with a sack ability.
It looks like the same guy.
It looks like the same guy. It looks like the skull. Its skull is in the bottom of the art for the Bone Cairn Butcher, which is why it's a throwback. It looks insane. Also, it reminds me of Ankle Shanker.
Yeah. Throwback to the Shankler.
Yeah, throwback to Vile Smasher before he got a name.
Gosh.
All right. So, what was your third one? You said you had three.
So I had a good mythic, and now I'm gonna have a bad mythic that I just happen to like. Okay, so hear me out when I say I like the Sultai card. Death begets life. It's an 8-mana sorcery.
And enchantments.
Draw a card for each permanent destroyed this way.
For 8 mana.
It's 8 mana, but I don't know. I like it. I like the art. What? I like that it's different. I like that probably somebody's going to expect something better, and that's always fun when you can work around the better thing. Do the worst thing. That's my motto. We all know that here.
Okay, so what's the other card it's kind of like? It's the... Decree of Pain, that's destroy all creatures that can't be regenerated. Draw a card for each creature destroyed this way. It's basically like a Decree of Pain for creatures and enchantments. Look, I'm not here to judge. Definitely not one that caught my eye, I'll tell you that much. Especially since I love my enchantments and don't want them going anywhere.
There's that graveyard
probably
again.
Why you're going to run it. Yeah. I mean, look, some solid picks. I do love the Rot Curse Rakshasa a lot. I think that's really cool. And I think that Beitor, it's already in the deck builder being worked on. Like, you're telling me Tavern Swindler is a card in Magic the Gathering? You kidding me? Tavern Swindler from not Streets. It's originally from Return to Ravnica, but was recently reprinted in Streets of New Capenna most recently. So it's super cheap, very easy to find in foil, and I do prefer the art from Streets, not gonna lie. It got somebody drinking Halo in a bar, and the idea is tap, pay 3 life, flip a coin. If you win the flip, you gain 3 life. Yo, tap, pay 3 life means that I'm at least getting a 3-drop at the end step. Like, don't even get me started, dude. I'm so in on that card.
She's ready to go. This whole deck, you can make some banger stuff with these colors, too.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I've been brewing it since it got played on Commander at Home in Chicago. Really, really interested in that card. And now that we have the whole set, I'm like, all right, I'm going in. It's time to finish it up and get this thing sleeved. Just like this next one for me, it's my turn. Nirv Crackling Vanguard. Now look, I'm on record as having been disappointed with the Mardu Dragon because Nirv's other version is just kind of like aggro for me versus this one from the Commander product. Excuse me, 5-mana, 4/4 flying Death Touch. When it enters, you make 2 goblin tokens, so it's like giving a little bit of a prosh thing. But whenever it attacks, exile a number of cards from the top of your library equal to the number of differently named tokens you control. During any turn you attacked with a commander, you may play those cards. Buddy, you know I got my Prosper deck that I don't get to take out anymore because people see it and they groan. You're telling me that I get to put Prosper in the 99 here, and then because I have a treasure token and near of attacks, I get to look at another top card? Gimme, gimme, gimme. Like, giving me an excuse to play, like, really silly token makers in these colors, like Underworld Hermit, which is like a riff on Evangel of Heliod, which is like a... That one originally is like equal to your devotion to white. It enters, you make that many soldiers or something, versus Underworld Hermit, which is the same thing, but for devotion to black, and it makes green squirrels. Yo, I'm trying to make all the dumb tokens I can make with Nier of Crackling Vanguard. And that includes myriad tokens. That includes copy tokens. I'm so in. I think this card is so sick. And even at a base level, if you have one token and you swing, that's still impulse draw that you can play because you attacked your commander. I'm in. I think Nirv is one of the coolest designs in the set. And I would not have expected that considering the first iteration that I saw was not my favorite. Cards that I'm excited about, I'll keep it simple. If you know me, you know I love the graveyard. You know that I love making a ton of creatures that die because I'm an aristocrats guy. You know for a fact that I'm going to be picking up, I don't know, 8 copies of Avenger of the Fallen, the 3-mana 2/4 death touch with mobilize X, where X is the number of creature cards in your graveyard. Buddy, let me tell you something. I'm going to make so many red warriors. I'm going to make so many little red warriors that I'm going to go into battle, let them try to get through, because if they do get through, they're dealing damage, and then I sacrifice them and they die and give me advantage, or Zulaport Cutthroat's still hanging out. Because at the end step, you got to sacrifice them anyway. Buddy, my Aristocrats decks did not need this kind of boost. They get there, I'll tell you that much. But god damn, this card f***ing rips. Sorry, Ken. This card, the moment they started with Mobilize, I was like, we need a Mobilize X card that's going to give me something that I can work with. And buddy...
She's working.
Avenger of the Fallen isn't the fucking best. Excuse my language, Ken. I'm really going off. I really love it.
We got our Mardu girly in the house. Like, you got to just let it all out. You got to show the emotion.
I'm about it. You know this. You know, okay, so like I'm essentially like, yes, the Mardu wedge is where I live, right? It's where I kind of am like, okay, this is where I cook the most. But I do have a lot of blue in my decks, right? I have it like, you know, I have Dimir decks. I have a one Soul Tide deck. I've got Esper lists and stuff. But I'll say this. What are we doing here? This dragon is insane. Let me have this dragon. Let me make all these little warriors because I've got my stacked graveyard. I can't get enough. This set has been, I don't want to say shockingly good because it implies that I wasn't expecting it to be as good. But there have been some surprises in the ways that it's gotten there. You know, I have one criticism about the commander set. One, I expected at least one gold card per precon, and we only got one new non-commander gold card in the Sultai list, Colossal Grave Reaver, which, mind you, is a banger. Definitely going in the Master Transcendent, that's for sure. But I thought that the non-commanders would have at least like one gold multicolored card each, and the Colossal Graveyard stands alone in that regard. So folks who are writing trivia questions in 5 years, remember this one because I just gave that one for you for free. So I don't know. I'm just too hyped about this set. I think that this is like one of the most excited. It's the most excited for a set that I've been in a little bit. So. And I don't care about Tarkir. Never have. Ugh. And here I am, reading the story and crying.
it's over the story,
loving Tarkir. This has made me a Tarkir believer. And I think that's got to feel like success to the folks designing at Wizards and to the folks writing the story. Congratulations, you guys. You did an amazing job, at least as far as I'm concerned. Morgan.
Yeah, coming from somebody who played... the Construct Pure Standard and have so many fond memories of this set coming out and cracking open boxes for fetch lands and just like the draft format, the seal. I mean, girl, she's all there. Wizards stood on business with this set. I cannot wait to crack some packs. Let's get it. Let's scoot the day.
I'll tell you what.
Get to Dragonstorm.
I might friggin' pick up a box of this stuff. Let me tell you that much. I might pick up a friggity box.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back in 2 weeks. I won't tell you who this time because I forgot, but we'll have it then. And Morgan, where can people find you? Where would you like them to check you out?
I'd just be on Blue Sky at Indigo Gentleman.
At Indigo Gentleman. That's right. And you can check me out at Mike Carrozza, MikeCarrozza on Blue Sky, Instagram. Technically, I'm on Twitter, but I don't really go there anymore. I have my website. I've got my comedy album. I've got my other podcast about Married at First Sight Australia. I am on the internet. I live there. Please come find me because I don't know how much traveling I'll be doing in the coming months, considering the state of the world. Anyway, I'm looking forward to playing more games. I can't wait for Tarkir. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about this episode. I'm very happy with it. Shout out to Chris for truly giving us an interview that exemplifies the idea behind the podcast. I really love this episode, and I love Tarkir, and maybe I'm just having a good day today, especially since yesterday I was at a funeral all day. But like, shout out to you for listening and still listening. Shout out to me for not knowing how to end a show. All right, I think that's good. It's time to scoot the day. Good night.